Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned to
Disorderly Conduct
with your host,
Vince in the Bay.
Hi there, honey. I'm number one-y.
Hi there, fella. I'd like to see you after the show.
Vince in the Bay.
Two, check two. Hey, check, 1, 2. Oh, motherfucking jail. 2, 2.
Steve?
It's Vince of the Motherfucking Bay. It's time for yet another edition of Disorderly Conduct. It's Wacky Wednesday, August 28th, 2013. I'm Vince, and I will be your audio erotic host for the next 2 hours. Very excited about tonight's special early edition. The show is 2 hours earlier than we normally broadcast, so we're going to be ending this show around the time I usually begin it. And it seems like people didn't get the memo that the show is early tonight. I announced it last night. I've tweeted about it like fucking crazy. And if you're out there and you're listening, tweet about the show. Remind people that that the show is happening now. This should be a fun show. Should be interesting, informative, insightful. I'm very happy to welcome two guests tonight to speak on the subject of the life and death of Michael Hastings. Tonight, I'm going to welcome blogger Sherry Roberts and Joe Biggs to the show to discuss the life and death of investigative journalist Michael Hastings. We will discuss the amazing short-lived career of Hastings and highlight some of the great work he did leading up to his untimely death, hoping that at least I get a better insight into what Hastings' state of mind was like at the time of his death, or leading up to the time of his death, and hopefully we can debunk any rumors or conspiracy theories or myths that have been associated with this story. And there's just been a really meager media coverage and overall investigation into his death. Hopefully beyond that, we can explore how Hastings' reporting relates to a lot of what the headlines that are out there right now today, such as this perceived, quote, war on journalists. It seems like there's a certain segment of the population that's being, you know, this sort of alternative fringe activist news reporting from people like Barrett Brown and Glenn Greenwald seems to be under fire. NSA leaks in the surveillance state. Michael reported on several stories related to this. The intimidation of whistleblowers like Manning and Snowden. I know Michael had a lot to comment on as far as Snowden was concerned. Michael was still alive when Snowden originally went into exile. Of course, everybody knows there's this email that a lot of people are CC'd on, including one of my guests tonight, Joe Biggs. And he hinted that the FBI was investigating him. Also, he was working on a story about the head of the CIA. We know that, and hopefully, you know, the word on the street is his wife, his widow, is going to finish up that piece, and that'll be interesting. I wonder if he can take down the CIA director from the grave. That would be pretty impressive. That'd be an impressive legacy. And then I hope Biggs will stick around and talk to me beyond Hastings, talk to me about a lot of the nitty gritty, the nuts and bolts of what's going on the ground in the Middle East and what our troops are actually doing. Get his firsthand account of that, because, you know, we're talking about bombing Syria, intervening in Syria now. And it's again, this is another case where it's like based on flimsy intelligence from the UK as UN inspectors are in the country. You know, it's just so dubious. And I'm curious to get Biggs's angle
now that he's out of that scenario and he's back in civilian status, I'm wondering what he thinks of all this stuff going on. And what I wonder what he would think Michael's take would be on Syria right now. Anyhoot, first things first, we're going to bring on Sherry. Sherry is a blogger, and you can find her at Sherry Speaks, I believe, or is it SherryRoberts.com? Sherry, are you there?
Yeah, it's SherrySpeak.com.
SherrySpeaks.com, that's right. So, Sherry, welcome to the show.
Hi, Vince. How's it going?
Oh, it's so much better now that you're here.
I know, we've been trying to hook this up for a long time.
I know. I'm glad it's finally coming together, and this as a bonus, we're going to have Biggs on with us later. So this is going to be awesome. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, I think that Joe is going to have quite a bit to say. You know, he and I've been talking quite a bit over the last week, and as you know, I wrote a story about him, and he had followed up with me, and so he has a lot to say, and he's actually going to be able to probably chime in really well on the Syria issue as well. We've actually discussed some of that too. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to when he joins us here in a few minutes.
And so you've got your blog going on over there. You've got you've done two pieces related to Hastings, and you have a new piece relating to Snowden and Manning. Tell us about what you found when you researched that piece, and give us an update on what you've been researching.
Okay, well, with regards to Michael Hastings, I never knew Michael personally, but I was a fan. You know, I'm a freelance writer, and I'm also an activist. And Michael is one of very few, or was one of very few journalists that are, you know, stand-up real journalists. We don't have a lot of that anymore. You know, we have a lot of infotainment type people. It's about ratings, and it's about the almighty advertiser's dollar versus telling the truth. However, Michael was really good about telling the truth, and, you know, he made a lot of enemies along the way in doing so. But what struck me, you know, I, like many people, thought that, you know, the accident was you know, questionable. Accidents happen. They happen out of the blue. No one expects them. But in light of, you know, the following day, Joe Biggs going on KTLA with Carolyn Costello and, you know, disclosing the email that he was blind copied on, you know, that raises a lot of flags. Obviously, you know, Mike knew something was up, you know, and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, what happened is, you know, because I am part of the 9/11 truth crowd, you know, I am associated with a lot of quote-unquote conspiracy theorists, and what I found, the difference between myself and some of the other conspiracy theorists, is that because I'm a writer, I do copious amounts of research, and I really, really try to get it right. And what I was finding was a lot of, you know, and pardon me if you're a fan, but a lot of Alex Jones fans jumped on the Hastings bandwagon conspiracy. And the next thing you knew, we had Alex Jones and the reporter from San Diego 6 and the Examiner, Kimberly Dvorak, you know, reporting on things that were basically outright lies, which was pointing at Biggs, which made me write the piece. And it was like, well, who is Staff Sergeant Biggs? You know, we've never heard of this guy, and all of a sudden he's the mouthpiece for the Hastings family, or so it appeared. And when the reporting from Alex Jones and Kimberly Dvorak came about, and they were talking about that Hastings' body being missing and Hastings' body being cremated without the family consent, you know, well, that's all, you know, if that were to be true, then, yeah, you know, hell, that's something we need to really follow up on. However, none of that was true. And, of course, neither Alex Jones or Kimberly Dvorak have done any, you know, formal retractions, corrections, or anything like that. And so I have a bone to pick with them. And that's kind of been my process, because Michael Hastings, at the very least, deserves to have his reputation intact and not torn apart by Alex Jones people, or, you know, just like the toxicology report that came out, you know, last week. You know, the headlines are saying, you know, he was on meth. Okay. Well, was he snorting speed, or was he taking some ADD medication like Adderall or something? And that's not to say it's okay if you don't have a prescription and he's abusing it, but there is a difference between that and meth. So all this false reporting is what started my process with the Hastings story. I would like his reputation to remain intact. He deserves it. Good guy.
Oh, yeah. They don't make him like him very often.
No, they don't. I mean, you know, there are, you know, a very small handful of current day journalists that, you know, they're doing a good job. And as an activist, like, a lot of people come to me and, you know, they say, you know, like, you'll have some people that'll love people like Webster Tarpley, and then some people that love people like Noam Chomsky, you know, and then, you know, and very few that like them both, you know. And it's like, well, I
love
like
them.
Noam because he
I
doesn't.
Love them both. I would do both of them.
Well, yeah, me
I'd,
too.
I'd
and
hang
here's,
out with
and here's,
those guys. I'd hang out with them together preferably.
Yeah. I mean, hey, come on, let's have a glass of wine, you know. But it's funny because the thing is that what people come to me and it's like, well, I don't like this one because they don't ever talk about X, Y, and Z. They only talk about this. And what I try to explain, as a writer myself, we can only write so much. And to do it right and to do it well and to do it factually versus spitting out misinformation or disinformation, you know, we have to focus on certain things. We cannot be everything to everybody. And so, you know, Noam Chomsky has his hot button issues, you know, and as does everybody else. Hastings, you know, obviously he covered a lot of, you know, Bush administration stuff and Obama administration stuff, war stuff. You know, he was hard-hitting news, and we need more of that.
No doubt about it. Especially now, when things are just escalating everywhere, they need more. They just physically need more reporters because, like, who can really focus on one thing? You know, there's Syria's popping off. Egypt is still going on. You know, like, technically, even Iraq, we're still like pretty well invested in Iraq right now, and you know,
yeah.
Afghanistan. And we've basically got every single country in that region. We're sort of occupying or looking over just about every country out there right now.
Yeah, and you know, it's crazy. I think right now, you know, Michael would be very, very busy writing. I think he'd have a lot to write about in response to this, and I think that with regards to Syria, he would be very loud and proud crying foul, and that's just my opinion, but I you know, I believe that he would be, you know, calling the administration on, you know, what is yet another, not necessarily founded. You know, we know that we have wars currently ongoing that even though Bush said mission accomplished way back when, nothing is accomplished and people are still dying on both sides. You know, we have Congress people and senators that have come out since and we were lied to. We didn't know the truth, but yet nothing's been done to rectify anything, you know, and the same thing, unfortunately, may very well happen with Syria. But I would caution all your listeners, Vince, that regardless of all the ramp up that we're hearing in the news, you know, be careful what you pass around, because I can tell you flat out, since 9/11, every single year, everybody's saying, okay, Iran's going to happen this year, Iran, you know, and, you know, we go through this every year. So yeah, shit's happening. And, you know, we have to be aware, but the biggest thing that we can do as a citizenry, whether it's in regards to news on Michael Hastings or ongoing stuff with Iraq and Afghanistan, or whether it's news about Syria or Iran, you know, or Russia, China, for that matter. We need to make sure that when we are online, that we realize we're not just talking to somebody that's sitting next to us. Even a status report, you may as well be in the Super Bowl, on the loudspeaker, talking to tens of thousands of people, because that's how social media works. And so in that, when we hit that like button and we hit that share button and all of that stuff, we need to realize that if we have shared something that we find out isn't true, or we didn't take 5 minutes to vet it, and we're propagating stuff, then we're just as bad as that mainstream media that we've been fighting against for a long time.
If you're just joining me, or us, it's Vince in the Bay here with my guest tonight, Sherry. She does the blog SherrySpeak.com, and we're talking about Michael Hastings and other world issues tonight. We're looking forward to being joined shortly by Joe Biggs, who will give us his perspective on Michael Hastings and the developing story of him after his death. And can you really you seem to be following this story as close as anybody. Are there any real heavy hitting news outlets that are really paying attention to this at all?
No, not to my knowledge. And you know, unfortunately, the expectation, the assumption, and, you know, we all know what assuming anything means, but the assumption from everybody would be that BuzzFeed and or Rolling Stone would be investigating and doing follow-ups. Neither of them have done anything more than, you know, kind of like a, you know, a goodbye piece. That being said, you know, we know, or we've been told, that Elise Jordan is doing her own investigation. Okay, now, if Elise is in fact doing her own investigation, as I pointed out in my article that I wrote with regards to Joe Biggs, is that anybody that's investigating anything, you know, a real investigator, they're not going to have vomit in the mouth every time something comes up. They're going to hold it close to their chest. They're not going to be talking about it because it's going to interfere with their investigation. So it's possible, you know, some, you know, the people, you know, maybe Ben Smith or whoever over at BuzzFeed and you know, people at Rolling Stone and Elise, you know, they could be, you know, helping each other out and doing an investigation. We don't know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
you could almost argue that was his last wish, because part of what he said was like, hey, let's lawyer up, let's not say anything, blah, blah, blah. And maybe they're following that lead. I mean, it would just be retarded for them to not even be curious, you know, and just for their own, you know, capitalization is it's a hot story. They're close to it. You know, they should seriously do, you know, they would be doing him a service by doing an investigatory report on
right.
his life and death and what he was, you know, what he was doing on leading up to that and you know, turn over all the research that he was doing. And, you know, I think that's what I'm most curious about with him is what did he have on, you know, on the back burner? What was he working on? You know, we knew he was finishing up this CIA expose on the director of the CIA. So,
I would like to address something that you said in your monologue. You know, we have been led to believe John Avalon on CNN's Reliable Sources had done a piece on Hastings, and he aired part of an interview from last summer that was he and his wife with Michael and Elise. And at the end of that, he said, you know, Elise had given permission to go ahead and air it. And then he was talking about this last story that Michael was working on with regards to CIA Director John Brennan. And he had said that Elise had said that she's finishing his last story. However, that is not true. What is in fact happening is Matt Farwell is finishing the John Brennan story. Matt Farwell was Michael's writing partner, for lack of a better way. He worked with Michael a lot. To my understanding, Michael did a lot of the research and writing, but then, you know, he'd have Matt do some writing too. I believe Matt is I don't know if he's just a freelancer, but he is tied to Rolling Stone, is my understanding. So there have been stories, like on Who, What, Why, and stuff like that, where Matt has said he's the one that's finishing that story. So I don't know, you know, maybe Elise is, you know, opining with him on it. Maybe she's doing a little work, but he has already gone public that he's doing it. As a matter of fact, it should be done, you know, pretty soon, you know, and we should be, you know, seeing it. Now, you know, what that story is, I can't tell you. I don't know what Michael was onto specifically with regards to John Brennan. What I can tell you, Vince, is I do not believe that this is the big story that Michael was so concerned about. Nor do I believe that his big story was with regards to Barrett Brown, and nor does Kevin Gallagher. I spoke with Kevin Gallagher. He's the director of Free Barrett Brown, and I interviewed him.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, yeah. And I encourage all the listeners, if you haven't, go to freebarrettbrown.org. But anyways, you know, Kevin had said that, you know, yes, Michael was going to be meeting with Barrett, you know, or at least his attorneys, you know, towards the end of June, early July. No date had specifically been sent. The story that Michael had been, you know, had said he was going to do on Barrett had been on hold for some time. You know, in Michael's own tweets, it was because, you know, he was busy with the election, blah, blah, blah. Now, that being said, with the Project PM that Barrett and Hastings were a part of, as well as some others, you know, there's some stuff, and I'm not exactly super well-versed, so I'm not going to talk deeply on it, but something called Endgame, and I'm sure you probably know quite a bit about it. And there is some speculation that possibly that's what Michael's big story was about, that maybe he, you know, had some more information, and that was more why he was going to meet with Barrett Brown and stuff like that, not just a story about Barrett Brown and his situation.
Yeah, that could totally be possible. Yeah, that's crazy.
You know,
how
we can go off the I was going to say, we can go off the total deep of conspiracy theories. We can toy with the idea that Michael Hastings is still alive, you know, as email said he was getting off radar.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. There's so many scenarios that are plausible right now. It's disgusting.
Yeah, and, you know, if that were the case, and I'm not saying that is, but if that were the case, it wouldn't take that many people involved. I mean, Michael was a respected journalist, and, you know, he'd been in L.A. for a while. You know, he was renting an apartment there, and he'd been there. Maybe he made some friends in the departments and stuff. You know, who knows, you know? I mean, and nobody knows. And, you know, so the thing is, the point with the whole Michael Hastings story is that we have to be better than the mainstream media. That does not mean that we just willy-nilly report on everything that comes across our computer screens. What that means is when something comes across of interest, we research, we vet it, and we don't just go to Alex Jones-type sources. You know, the rule of journalism is usually, you know, at least two, but you want to find three, you know, three credible sources that all, you know, corroborate each other, and then you can kind of run with something. And people aren't doing that. They're just hitting like and share. And most of the time, they're not even reading what they're sharing.
Oh, yeah. It's disgusting.
Yeah. And I apologize.
Yeah, I
should have told you I talk really fast.
I got a couple of them, and they ended up being goatsy. It was disgusting.
Yeah. It's just crazy. It's just crazy. Some of the stuff I have people, you know, especially since I started writing on the Hastings issue, I have people every day, you know, contacting me and sending me stuff. And, you know, it's just, it's disgusting, some of the stuff, you know. And I have gone on the record in my writing and on Cindy Sheehan's soapbox as well as other places. And I have no problem saying on your show, Alex Jones is a modern day cult leader, and his followers are incredibly irresponsible, his core followers, and as he is. Now, that being said, Alex Jones could be a really good media person. He has, not always, but sometimes he has some amazing and excellent and true information. But how he presents it, projects it, and so on, he makes every activist look like we're loons.
Right on, sister. 347-826-7667 is the call-in number. We're gonna bring on Joe Biggs here in just a second. Later in the show, we'll open up the lines and take questions from callers if people are interested. But now I want to add to the conversation here, Joe Biggs. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing much, bro. We're just kicking it here. Sherry has been talking about Michael Hastings. We've been focusing a lot on what he was working on at the time, what his big, quote, big story was. Now, give us a quick little backstory on you. Tell us about yourself and your connection to Michael.
Well, I joined the military a few years back, and, you know, like most young, impressionable minds that were Americans, after 9/11, I was pretty pissed off, and at the time, didn't really know what was going on, you know, as far as how corrupt the government can be and things like that. But, you know, I watched the video at the recruiting station, and I was all about be all you could be, and I joined up, and I walked in, and I looked at the recruiter, and I said, I want combat, I want as fast as I can, I want to go to Iraq, and I want to serve my country. And next thing you know, I was in basic training. I was at Fort Bragg, and then I was off to Iraq. So that's how that whole thing started. Well, you know, flip a few chapters down the road, and I'm back overseas in theater again, and I'm in Afghanistan. This deployment was quite a long one, more than most deployments, over a year long. And, you know, from time to time when you're out there, especially on the border of Pakistan and pretty rough little areas, I lived in a small little house that was, you know, we held about 15 of my guys from the 82nd and then another 15 or so from the 101st. And we patrolled on foot an area about 10 times the size of Manhattan. And we didn't have a lot of equipment. We didn't have a lot of food. We were just dropped off by a helicopter and told to pretty much just fend for ourselves and, you know, do these missions. So throughout that time, a lot of people, journalists, heard about that and going, you know, hey, this is crazy. You know, we want to go out there. We want to be a part of the action. And, you know, you would run into a lot of journalists, and they would always talk to you and seem to be very hard individuals who, you know, were ballsy reporters who could get out there and get right there in the fight and report the story and go back home and make everyone look like heroes, but that wasn't the truth. They would all shriek their little balls and cry like babies, and at times I heard grown-ass men who were probably in their 40s cry for their mom and say that, hey, they couldn't handle this. Well, I get another call from our command and saying that we have a group of guys coming in from GQ at the time. And I'm like, oh, great, here we go. Another reporter, I got a baby around and walk around.
Oh, wait, GQ magazine?
Yeah, he was doing a story. He did a story at the time when he was with us. He was doing a piece for Dan Rather Reports called The Commander and a story for GQ called Obama's War, which was on us, on my unit.
Wow, that's interesting. I got to find that article. That's cool.
So he was embedded with us. He gets there, and, you know, at first, because I'm the loudmouth kind of guy, I'm a very energetic person, I'm not afraid to speak my mind and call someone out on BS and, you know, just do what I got to do and not get caught up in the madness. I'm very calm under fire. So my commander was like, hey, Staff Sergeant Biggs, I need you to, you know, show these guys around, just kind of make sure they're fine and just make sure that, you know, they don't get hurt. So in comes these guys, and I meet the first guy, Lucian Reed, and I start to meet him and talk to him. And Lucian is a war photographer. He is famously known for the Hatha murders that the Marines were a part of. He photographed the entire event and was in court for that and had to show his pictures for that.
Can you tell me his name again? Can you repeat that?
Lucian Reed.
Lucian Reed. Is he on Twitter by any chance?
Yes, but he never uses it. That's who I went to the memorial service with. To meet Michael's wife and family with and all that. I stayed with him, his wife, and his son.
Lucian has a website. I believe it's lucianreed.com, and it's R-E-A-D, like reading a book.
Yeah, he's got numerous sites. He's like photo labs. Like, he did a lot of photography. Now he's doing more production stuff for, if I'm not mistaken right now, he's doing a thing on climate control for Cinemax or HBO because, Michael C. Hall from Dexter, Lucian just helped film the last episode of Dexter, and then Michael C. Hall is narrating this big piece that he's doing. So anyways, I meet Lucian, great guy, we get along, we're talking more stories, you know, looking at pictures, and Lucian's more of a kind of held back kind of guy, you know. He's more of, you know, he doesn't trust everybody off the bat. He kind of, you know, is skeptical. He likes to get to know you. He's a little bit more quiet at the beginning, and then he warms up to you and jumps in. Well, then I meet Michael, and, you know, Michael was just like my twin brother almost. I mean, like, me and him were connected. You know, we were just, you know, taken apart as babies and separated. I mean, this guy came in, and we just laughed all the time, talked all the time. Would sit up, you know, out in the desert and just look up at the sky and just laugh about stuff and talk about just anything. It didn't matter. I mean, it was just one of those guys I felt like I could just – I didn't feel like – you know, I felt like I could say anything I wanted to this man, and I knew he wasn't going to go run off and just report on all this stuff and just say anything because he knows I'm – you know, when you're in a bad place like that, you know, at times you do joke about things that are pretty disturbing. You talk about things that are just out there that most people don't – or can't fathom, but you've got to make the best out of the time that you're there, and you've got to learn to deal with the hardships that are around you. And he understood a lot of the things that was going on because he had been there in Iraq previously. He had lost his wife, you know. And him and I became friends. And, you know, after my deployment was up, he was still stuck over in country. Well, that Icelandic volcano, if I'm not mistaken, happened, and he wasn't able to fly. I got over to the States and landed in Maine right before that happened. And I remember emailing him and him telling me, like, hey, man, I got redirected to France. I think that's what it was when they had that UN meeting. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm getting stuck out here with just, you know, this General Crystal guy. And I remember just kind of like going, oh, okay, you know, that's going to be fun. And that's how that whole thing started. You know, a lot of people keep saying that it was planned. He had no idea this was going to happen. He got thrown into it. Backtrack a little bit. Out of all the people I met, though, out of journalists in combat, this man was calm, collective, and just brilliant still in combat. Bullets flying downrange, whizzing by his head, and that guy just sat there and did his job. He smiled. He didn't shake. And when he was, like, I remember just shooting and firing back because we had, the Taliban were attacking us this one day. And I remember just looking down and asking if you're okay. And he just smiled at me. He goes, hey, you know, is there more? You know, what's going on? Like, he was just so excited to be there, to do his job and just to be a part of something and not just reading it or seeing it on the news. He was just, you know, excited to do his job and be a part of something and to actually be there and finally say something. Do what?
He was living it.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, you know, and seeing that in his eyes, I saw the same thing I saw from brothers and people. And people, you know, they're like, well, you know, how can you talk for the family? Well, I never talked for the family. Number one, I never asked to have that email sent to me. I was going to be friends with Michael regardless of what happened. When I found out that next day, when I found out that he died, I got the email the day before, and I was just as heartbroken as anyone else. I emailed the people at BuzzFeed, and they responded back with nothing other than, you know, what are you talking about? How do you know about this? And that really hurt my feelings and pissed me off. I emailed them again. I said, hey, is it not weird that you guys get this email and now all of a sudden Mike's dead? Does anyone else not think this is something that needs to be looked into? Question mark, question mark, question mark. And I didn't get anything back. So I, you know, dealt with this moral dilemma. What should I do about this? You know, and that's when I took the steps that I did and put that email out. But, you know, Mike was just a guy who really touched me in a sense that, like, he changed my life. That, you know, I the way I used to look at a journalist and the way that I look at them now and respect them is all because of him. I have a whole new respect for that side, that business now, because, I, you know, a lot of people in my job got screwed over a lot of times by journalists. They would just say stuff or whatever, and then they would go and report on them and say that, you know, these guys are just these, you know, crazy guys over with guns going around trying to kill people and blah, 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 you know, and really, you know, screwing up a guy's head that's been stuck over there for about a year, year and a half, and coming home and having to hear this. You know, Mike dealt with things a different way. And through our friendship after, you know, I got into the military, and even while I was still, when I got back from Afghanistan, he would call me from time to time, check on me, ask me how I'm doing, and I would do the exact same thing. And there would be times that I would email him or call him and I wouldn't get an answer. I would just get like an automatic response back saying, hey, I'm working on something. I'm overseas or whatever it is. I'll get back to you. And sometimes it'd be a month or so and he would call me back or email me back and we'd pick up again and just check on each other. We never spoke about our, you know, each other's families. We basically just asked how each other was doing. A lot of times, Michael wrote a men's journal article on Kiowas, which is a form of helicopter used in combat over there. And he had quotes from his brother, and he had a whole quote on me from that day where we were in a firefight in Afghanistan. And outside of that, he would call me and ask me my opinion from military things because he respected me, and as well I respected Michael. I mean, to me, he was just one of the greatest people I knew. And just forever, you know, my life will be changed by this guy. I mean, I don't know any other way else to put it. I mean, the guy was just an amazing person. I mean, he fought for the truth. He fought for, you know, the freedom of the press to be able to just say what they wanted to say. You know, and then when this happened, it just really just shattered me, man. Like, it hurt to see that, especially when that email came to me and I tried to call and I didn't get any response. And then I get a call from a friend telling me that he died. I mean, he just broke my heart, and I cried and cried and cried. I lost like 20 pounds. I stopped going to school. I almost got kicked out of summer school because I didn't know how to deal with it because, you know, like I said, I didn't ask to be a part of this. You know, it came to me and no one else was doing anything and I had to do something. And I had to say something.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Exactly. And Vince, may I jump in real quick because this is a really good segue for something to do with Biggs. Hi, Joe. you know, Joe will tell you, I have actually gotten attacked by a few people with regards to the story that I wrote about Joe. And you know, Joe is here with us right now, and he'll tell you, I didn't attack him. And what I did discover in my research, and of course, you know, I can't know this for a fact, but in my heart of hearts, and all the talking that Joe Biggs and I have done, all the research I've done on him, the hours and hours I've spent watching video of him, You know, I really believe that Joe is sincere. There are people out there that think he's a plant. Okay, now, he didn't ask to get blind copied on that email. And just like he said right now, for all appearances, we see nobody doing anything. We see no real investigations going on. You know, this is his friend. You know, they bonded in wartime and then, you know, and you know, he feels a heavy burden of responsibility because of somebody that he loved dearly. And, you know, people should be stepping forward and helping assist him because Joe will tell you himself, he is not an investigative journalist. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's just trying to do something right. And we should be helping him. We shouldn't be bad-mouthing him. And we shouldn't be turning our back on the Hastings story. That's for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, this is just too untimely of a point in time for somebody like him to go. And I think people need to pick up the torch for people like him. And I think you know, his colleagues owe it to him to do something about this. And
think about how much money his colleagues, his employers, these periodicals that he has written for all these years, think about the money that Michael Hastings has made them. When are they going to invest back in Hastings' reputation so that this can just, you know, end in peace and truth?
Like I said, I don't know anything about this stuff, and I've done more freaking work than half these people on trying to figure out what's going on. You know, when I originally said that Michael was, you know, days before, you know, a day or two before, looking under his car, people were like, oh, this guy is spreading conspiracies. He's just a loon. He's just nut job. You know, and I mean, I can understand that, you know, but it's, thank God it's finally coming out to where they're, you know, with the report saying that his neighbor said that, you know, Michael had been checking his car and asking to borrow another car. I have sources, and I've learned to find information because I'm a motivated person, and not only that, I'm a great freaking friend. And if you are part of my life, I will bend over backwards to find out anything I can to help you out. And if something happens to you, I'll do anything I can to make sure that you're doing good. He's my buddy, and the bottom line is there's no one else, like I said, doing that much about it. And I've got to do something because I know if it was me that died, Mike would have looked at the same scenario and been like, all right, this stuff doesn't add up. There's a lot of questions that need to be answered. I'm going to look into this. I'm going to figure out what the hell is going on. And he'd be doing the same freaking thing. All I want to know is what happened to him. If it comes down to it tomorrow, and there's 100% truth saying that his car just blew up or whatever happened, and he was all drugged up out of his mind and this and that, and I know and I can feel in my heart that what I'm hearing is true, I'll let it go. And I said that from day one. That's fine. I have no problem with accepting that as a possibility. But still, I can't stomach this as an accident. I don't sleep at night. I know something's wrong. Everyone gets that gut feeling when something just isn't right. And I get that feeling every time I look at the freaking internet, every time I print out a report, every time I look at something and I get some kind of piece of information and it adds up more and more to different things, the stuff doesn't just add up. You know, I didn't ask to go to Michael's memorial. You know, obviously I wanted to go, but I was invited to go. You know, and people are saying, well, how does he have any, like, why is he the speaker of the family? I'm not the speaker of the family. All I did was just stand up and say that I got an email, and then after that it was just a floodgate open. And like I said, I don't know how to deal with this stuff. People just kept calling me every day. We want to find something out. What's going on? And at first I was scared. You could even ask, what's her name, Caroline Costello from in L.A. It took a while to even get me to even do, like, the Skype thing. I mean, I was scared out of my mind. I have no idea what to do with this stuff. And I'm trying to learn how to do it the right way, how to handle it the right way as I go. And you know what? The person that I get advice from right now in this situation is freaking dead right now. The only person I know that I could go to right now in this situation is Michael Hastings. And he's not here anymore. So all I can do right now is trial and error and try to figure this out the right way. And luckily I've met some people along the way who have given me good advice, such as Sherry. She's helped me, and we've talked the past few days and been very nice and been very, very supportive and, you know, told me I shouldn't talk to certain people and warned me of the possibilities of how that could look bad on the investigation and things like that. You know, really honestly, when a lot of this stuff broke, I didn't know what to do. All I could think was, if I don't say anything, if I stop talking, Mike's name's out of the news, people are going to forget about a great man, and he's just going to die in vain. And I would never be happy for the rest of my life. And I kept giving,
right.
You know, people just kept wanting to talk to me and be like, hey, you know, talk about this. And all I wanted to do was talk about Mike. I just wanted people to remember who he was, and I didn't want it to come out of the news because I was hoping eventually someone would get pissed off like I am right now and be like, hey, we need to look into this, and we need to get together. We need to figure something out because things don't add up.
Well, Joe, I can tell you, you know I'm on your side, and you know anything I can do for you, you just need to ask, and if it's in my power, I will. And I can tell you that Vince and I have been talking for weeks about this, and I feel comfortable saying that Vince, too, is in your corner as far as if you need help and there's something that we can do. And it's a matter of networking you with the right people, and so that the things that you do are not being perceived as questionable, so nobody is targeting you in the sense of calling you some kind of agent or plant, you know, and that sort of stuff. Or, you know, as you and I have talked, you know, there's people out there that say, oh, you're just in it for, you know, some mini celebrity and stuff like that. But, you know, that's not the case. You know, people can look at your Twitter, Joe, and they can see, you know, Mr. Personality, you know, head of security at the club and all that, and you look like this really, you know, great outgoing guy, which you have a great personality. But just like anybody else, you stick cameras in your face, and, you know, that's a whole new world. And, you know, and when you're trying to do what you're trying to do by getting as much attention and longevity of that attention in the media, you know, it makes sense that you would grasp that whoever is going to give you that time. And so, you know, let us help you. And I appreciate your time. And thank you very much for thanking me. That was very sweet. And guys, I hate to say this, but as you know, I'm on a time limit and I have to bail. So I hope you guys have a great night, and I hope the rest of the show goes well. Joe, I'd love to talk to you tomorrow. Vince, let's reconvene tomorrow, and thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you,
Sherry. Good night.
Good night.
Appreciate it. Until next time. Thank you, Sherry. That's Sherry Speaks, or Sherry Speak on Twitter. So, Joe, can you stick around for a little while more?
Yeah, no problem.
Sweet. We're going to take a quick little break, listen to this song that you selected tonight. As you know, folks, I try to have all my musical interludes curated by my guests. And tonight, it's going to be this song that Joe picked out. It's Joe, you want to tell us about the song and why you picked it?
Yeah, it's Angel Sun by Seven Dust. It's just about a friend of the band who died young and an untimely death. And, you know, for me, it's just something that hit for me when you asked me the song. It's the first thing that popped in my mind. And it's always been a song that's touched me. And, I mean, it definitely has meaning now. So I appreciate the fact that you're playing it, sir.
Excellent. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate you calling in tonight. I look forward to talking to you some more on the other side of this break. Here's Seven Dust with Angel's Son. Be right back.
I'm You're tuned to Disorderly Conduct with your host, Vince in the Bay. Give us a call, bitches, 347-826-7667. And now your host, Vince in the Bay.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. It's Vince in the Bay. Back here with you. We're still in hour number one. Big ups to Sherry Roberts, a.k.a. at Sherry Speak. At Sherry Speak on Twitter. It was great to hear from her tonight. I hope to connect with her on the show again sometime in the not-so-distant future to follow up on this story and more. We didn't even get to talk about her recent piece on Snowden and Manning, but maybe next time. Thank you, everybody, who showed up for the right time today. I hope this earlier broadcast was satisfactory. I know for some people it's still a late broadcast, but this is probably the earliest I'm ever going to do a show. I don't think I'll ever do a show earlier than this. This is ridiculous. Unless there was some event I was covering that was in the middle of the day, there's just no way. Oh, big ups to Channel Zero YT for tweeting out the show. Thank you, Sherry Roberts, for tweeting the show. Thank you, Anon Corp Watch, trademarked, I guess, for tweeting out the show. COF Ministries, that would be a.k.a. City of Flint, who's in the chat room. Big ups to you, City of Flint. If you're not following City of Flint on Twitter, you should. He gives a great insight into the just the fucked up world of City of Flint, Michigan. Skeetalicious Cunt, thank you for tweeting the show. Troll Your Government, a.k.a. Okanagan D, underscore Anon. Okay, I don't even know what that means. Your Anus News, thank you for tweeting the show as per usual. Becalina, thank you for tweeting and trying to get we need not only my FEMA ninja, but we need my Fed ninja to live tweet the show. I miss the live tweets by my Fed ninja. Thank you, Rain Coaster, for pointing out the Ron Brinert song. I haven't heard it yet, but I may or may not play it tonight or some other time. But who else? Cyber War Indonesia, Cyber War News, and Jesus, a ton of other. Oh, Raven Bowden, thank you for tweeting the show. Who else? Derek J. Thompson, thank you for tweeting the show. Actions, thank you. Ron Brinert himself tweets the show. Thank you, Ron. To Alcoholic, Al underscore Caholic, also in the chat room. Thank you for tweeting out the show. Trina Cuppet, Trina R. Cuppet, thank you for tweeting the show. And if you have a Rain Coaster, thank you. Thank you. And Jacqueline Victoria, thank you, everybody, for tweeting the show. I really, really appreciate that. Tweet it again. Why not? So, oh man. Big ups to, okay, let's do quick big ups to everybody in the chat room, and I'm going to bring Joe back on in a second. Really quick, chat room roll call. Actions, Antithesis, Anthesis, Billy Ray Bob, City of Flint, Cyber War News, F470. Oh, wait, is that supposed to be like Leet Haxor? Is that supposed to be F-A-T-O? Fato? Is that what that's supposed to be? I don't know. Gorillas by Night. Thank you, Gorillas by Night. Several guest listeners lurking in the shadows. Thank you for tuning in, people. A lot of people listen to the show streamed and live tweet. I like that. I appreciate that form of participation. Thank you, Okanagan. Thank you for showing up. Fool. PH3WL. Raven Bowden. Thank you, Raven Bowden, for showing up. Also, we got Smokes a Lot Broadcasting. Old friend of the show. Thank you for tuning in. Transhuman in the house. Thank you, Transhuman. Your Anus News in the building. What's up, Your Anus News? And last but not least, Zora. Zora, good to see you in the chat room. Thank you. We're going to open up the phone lines here. And first, I'm going to bring back on Joe. Joe, are you there?
Yes, sir.
So, you know what? Something I thought about during the break there, something I wanted to ask you was, you personally, on your journey from life on the battlefield, how has it been for you outside of this Hastings thing? How's adjusting to civilian life been for you exactly?
It's not so hard if I stay in my apartment and don't go out. I know that's funny to say, but you know, when you work with people in the military, and it regardless of, you know, whether, you know, the government's right or wrong, just the things that you learn in the military, the values are instilled into you every day, the punctuality, the being on time, the structure, the brotherhood. The biggest thing for me is, you know, the brotherhood and having that trust and having that respect from the men under you and having the respect for the men that are over you. And everyone's there to work together to make something happen, whether it be as minute as sweeping a motor pool to taking out a, you know, a clan of Taliban, whatever it may be. It's something that it takes a while to get used to, but once you get used to it and it's ingrained in you, it's so hard to let go of. And I struggle every day. Like, I'm in college right now using my GI Bill. And, you know, I've got a lot of younger men and they complain in class and we're always late, and it just irritates me, and I'm a loud person, so I'll be like, you know, hey, why the hell are you being disrespectful to the teacher? You know, you need to be here on time. You know, on top of that, you're paying for this. Why would you pay for something and then not even – that's like paying for a movie and walking into the end credits. I don't get it.
Dude,
you know, in the military, you're taught that when someone speaks, you listen to them, and you're attentive, and you take notes, and you're respectful, and there's a lot of that I don't see. And that's a big thing that's difficult for me to understand. It's something that definitely raises my anxiety up, and it's something I'm working on. But that's for me, that's one of the biggest issues, is just that punctuality, that brotherhood, that whole aspect of the thing that you get, you know?
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying, absolutely. I can only imagine what a transition it can be for some people. And it sounds like you've got a good head on your shoulders. You're able to keep things in perspective. And Michael's legacy, his family, his friends, definitely should owe a debt of gratitude for you just for the curiosity that you have alone. I think that's what you're doing is totally within the spirit of what Michael was all about and what he would have done. And I think people appreciate that. Unfortunately, I think there really is. I can't believe people are just trying to sweep this under the rug or not looking into it, especially his really close colleagues. And I can only imagine that these people are, you know, not secretly, but just kind of on the DL investigating. I think there's got to be people doing it. And there's just so much evidence probably, and there's so much to this story and what he was doing at the time and what his state of mind was, that there's got to be so many pieces to this puzzle that we're just slowly trickling in. And apparently there's going to be another report coming out on the 9th. Is that correct?
Well, you're talking about the Rolling Stones article?
No, there's a Rolling Stones article coming out too?
Well, yeah, that's the last piece that Michael was working on. CIA story. Yes.
Oh, that's coming out next month?
No, I don't know when it's coming out. That's the only story that I know of coming out.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's so much stuff going on out there. Yeah. Well, I mean, here's one of the things I don't understand. People are saying that, and I think people are misunderstanding what Elise was saying when she was on that Piers Morgan show. She said that Michael Cera would be coming out very soon, you know, in the next few weeks. And people are taking that to the fact that she is writing it. From what I know, she is not writing it. Michael and I's friend, Matt Farwell, which Sherry mentioned earlier, from what I know and what he said to me, he is the one writing the story. He has been working on it. And that's one of my contacts I've been using, you know, since this whole thing happened. Actually, he contacted me when I went public with an email and said, hey, buddy, I was one of Michael's good friends. If you need any help with anything, I'll give you any information you need. Well, I didn't know who he was at the time, so I was skeptical to trust him, and I didn't know what I could do with that. So Lucian Reed calls me on Saturday on 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern time, and he goes, hey, the memorial service is tomorrow morning. You're going to fly to Amita, Vermont. Get your bags ready. The plane will be ready to, you know, take off in about an hour. How quick can you be at the airport? So I just threw a bunch of random clothes in my bag and just drove to the airport in Charlotte as fast as I could. Jumped on the plane, met up with Lucian Reed, and, you know, him and I sat down and talked at the hotel, and we, you know, got a few beers and just sat there, and, you know, we talked about possibilities. What are people going to say? What do we know about Michael? And we started problem solving and running through scenarios of things that might come up in the future, one of them being drugs. And I said, do you know Michael taking drugs? I don't know Michael taking drugs. And he said, no, not that I know of. You know, Lucian was like, Mike's been on the wagon for, you know, five years or more that I know of. And I don't know of him falling off that. And, you know, I agreed with him as well. So that night goes on.
Turns out that he admitted in one of his books, on his book on the 2012 campaign trail, he admitted in that book to relapsing onto Adderall. He blatantly says it in that book.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I know. I'm just saying that I didn't know that at the time. I didn't read every single thing that Michael put out. I mean,
right,
Michael was
doing
everything that there was.
That's like I said,
at that time, all we did was just we were just trying to run through our minds what we knew and what we could think of based off what we knew at the time. And then fast forward to the next day when we got to the memorial service, I met his mother, his father, his two brothers, and it was just a very sad time to be there. It was just horrible, but at the same time it was amazing to see how many people showed up. And you know, and anybody who knew anything about Michael was, you know, he kind of leaned more towards the Democratic side in a sense, and you know, his wife was more on the Republican side. You know, at the memorial service there were campaigners for the Democratic Party, for the Republican Party, people from Newsweek. There were so many people that, you know, it's like when the Iron Sheik and Hulk Hogan or whatever it was hung out, found out about it, they were just mind blown. Like, really? I thought these guys were enemies. You know, how could this be possible?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's what you see in the media. What?
I said, behind the scenes, they're all buddies. They're all neocons, dude. All of them.
I mean, Mike knew so many people. And his, you know, his job, he traveled around and met so many people. And it was just amazing sitting there, like, And I remember walking in, and I was just kind of shy because I didn't really know his family at all. I knew of them, but I didn't know them. And the first thing I could think of was like, all right, if someone could come to me like, all right, why the hell is this guy running his mouth? Why did he release this email? He should have just kept his mouth shut and let everything just go its course and blah, 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 blah. And I remember, you know, I just kept seeing his father cry and cry and cry, and it just ate away at me. And I look at Luce, and I was like, hey, I got to walk outside real quick. So I started walking away, and I hear Staff Sergeant Biggs, and I turn around, and it was Mike's wife, Elise. And she's got, you know, like a handkerchief, not a handkerchief, but like a Kleenex in her hand, and she's like wiping tears away from her eye, and she's like, come here. I need to ask you something. And I was like, oh, shit, you know, this could go either way. She could be mad, and she could be, you know, glad that I did this. And I was just sitting there. It seemed like the longest 5 seconds of my life. And she walked over and just started crying and put her head on my shoulder and said, thank you. And, you know, automatically I just felt better, you know, about the whole situation. The fact that, you know, maybe I did do the right thing by saying, you know, putting that out there, you know, giving a little extra life to the whole investigation instead of people just chopping it up to be an accident and just letting it go and slipping it under the rug. Maybe I made the right choice and people are going to look into this and it's not going to be that bad after all.
Yeah,
and
no,
she just
I think you're
talking to me. Do what?
Yeah, no, I think you're doing this for all the right reasons, and it's very admirable. You know, I wish you all the luck in the world in seeking out the truth and honoring the spirit of Michael Hastings. You know, I think maybe idealistically, I probably would have had some clashes with him, you know, maybe politically or whatever. But I think as far as him just being a hard-nosed investigative reporter, and who didn't pull any punches. He attacked the left and the right, you know, with the same tenaciousness. And I thought the McChrystal article was unfair. To be honest, I was surprised he didn't get blackballed from the industry. Instead, you know, he became famous off of that.
Well, I mean, there's I'm sure many as we found out that the NSA and all that spies on all our damn calls and text messages. So I'm sure there's a way to figure out the conversations between me and Michael in this situation. But I remember when the story came out, or before it came out, he called me and we talked about the whole thing. And he was like, do you think I'm wrong in this? And he's like, I just want the, you know, the insight from, you know, a boots on ground kind of guy like you. Do you think I'm an asshole if I do this? He's like, you know, it was just kind of just like, you know, am I doing the right thing? I know I'm doing the right thing, but just, you know, he just wanted some comfort almost in a sense. And I was like, I'm 100% behind you. I was like, I don't like the guy. I mean, we lost more people when McChrystal took over because in order for us to protect ourselves, we had to be basically wounded to even shoot back in combat. So most of us were, you know, very anti-McChrystal at the time. We were very pissed off at the rules of engagement he was coming out with because it was putting us in more harm's way. We've already lost enough people at the time. And a lot of us were angry about a lot of that. But that was just things that we talked about on the side. I remember when the story broke and him and I talked and he's like, man, he's like, you know, I'm scared. And, you know, and I told him, I was like, hey, bro, I was like, I would be scared too. I was like, you basically just got the general of a war fired. I was like, I would not be able to sleep at night. And he had concern, but that was it. The concern and the way he spoke in the email was a completely different thing from him being scared about getting a general fired. He was just more of like, all right, man, these guys are going to, you know, come at me. You know, this is just a little scary. And in the email I get, he's like, you know, it almost seemed like a last will and testament, like, this is the last time I'm going to talk to anybody. I hope everybody's ready. Please get ready to, you know, speak up and say something. And that's why that email struck me, because I've seen Michael in, you know, the face of adversity in combat, bullets flying at him, and then having that happen with McChrystal, that's why my stomach hurt when I got the email. That's why when hours later the accident happened, my stomach hurt, and I felt bad because things didn't add up. Because Michael was a man of integrity. He was an honest person. He wasn't going to bend his story to fit your truths. He was a man who spoke honestly and said the right thing, regardless of whether or not you wanted to hear it or not. And like you said, a lot of people aren't going to agree with what he said and his views on a lot of things, but at the end of the day, you can't knock him for being, you know, just this dead on
hand.
Oh,
you know what?
And
I'm sorry. What? You said you violated one of the rules of my show, Joe. I'm sorry.
What I said?
I should have explained the ground rules tonight. There are a few buzzwords that I don't allow on my show. Not like any 4-letter words. You can say fuck, shit, piss, cunt, dick, whatever.
But there's certain things, buzzwords you gotta avoid. One is you can't use the word that starts with the letter L. I call it the L word, and the opposite of it is figuratively, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't violate that one. You've been good on that so far. The other one is shout outs. We don't do shout outs here. We do big ups. We do props. Shout outs, like, you know, 85-year-old people, women, give shout outs. We're young people here. Okay, we're on the internet. What else? I'm just saying that some of this stuff has jumped the shark. Oh, the phrase in terms of, oh, major pet peeve. Also, the one that you violated was at the end of the day. No offense, but I hate that saying. Oh my God, it's like not at the beginning of the day. You know, we're all in the same gang. It's like, no, at the beginning of the day we're all in the same gang. In the middle of the day we're all in the same gang, and at the end of the day. I mean, why does it have to be at the end of the day? Sorry, it's just a pet peeve of mine. You only get 2 minutes, and while you're having 2 minutes, I have a guy that has a question for you. So you can just listen to. You've already served almost half of your time just listening to me tell you the rules. So I'm going to bring on Guy, give him a chance to throw you a question, and I'll unmute you, Joe. No offense, nothing personal. I just have, you know, I run this show like a benevolent fascist dictator. Think of, say, I don't know, Mussolini updated for the internet age. And, I have to remind everybody, my chat room is a no free speech zone. In fact, the entire show, if you call in, if you're in the chat room, it don't matter. Your First Amendment right ends at the front door. Okay? And there's ground rules. You heard about them. Also, I want to take this opportunity to do a disclaimer and say the views and opinions expressed on this show are not reflective of the views and opinions of Vince in the Bay, Blog Talk Radio, Blog Talk Radio staff, sponsors, or supporters. They are the views and opinions of the respective sovereign individuals who are saying them. With that said, let's bring up Guy Montag. Guy Montag, you're on. You have a question for Joe Biggs. What's up?
Yeah, hi. I've got a question for him about the memorial service. Earlier this month, Tim Dickinson at Rolling Stone put out a nice tribute to Michael, in which he quoted Hastings' younger brother Jeff, who had been an Army lieutenant in Baghdad back in 2006, I believe, Bronze Star Infantry LT. The quote was, his younger brother says he accepts the obvious, in some ways more difficult, explanation for his brother's death, that Michael simply drove too fast and didn't survive. The quote was, I don't believe it's a conspiracy. There's no part of me that's troubled by that. My question for Joe would be, did he happen to speak to Jeff Hastings at the memorial service, or any other members of the family besides at least Jordan?
Can I talk now?
Say it again? Did you talk to him? Yes.
You're back.
I don't know if I was going time out or not. All right. So, yes, I did speak to the brother. We had lunch together and probably spoke for, I would say, an hour and a half right after the memorial while we ate salad and chicken and whatever else stuff they have there, followed by an hour break where we dropped off Lucian's wife and his kids and went to the Hastings house where I spent the rest of the evening and hung out with the whole family and talked. So go back to the question again, what were you saying? Sorry, I just wanted to clarify the fact that I did talk to him.
Yeah, well, the question is, I mean, he expressed in that quote, he doesn't believe the conspiracy. There's no part of him that's bothered by that. And I just wondered if you might have any insight on that, if he had said something to you concerning the time or not.
Well, when I spoke to Elise, I said, I don't have a good feeling about this. Do you? She looked at me and said, no. We both felt the same way. Lucian and I walked away, and we sat down at the table with Jeff, and we're eating, and, you know, everyone's just kind of, like, talking about stories from the, you know, his bachelor party, Mike's bachelor party. Everyone's talking about this and that. And I kind of butted in and I said, does anybody else think this is a little weird? And most people at the table, and when I say most, actually I would say all, agreed that this was a fishy, fishy situation where it was something that needed to be looked into. And that was a general consensus I got from most people. But I was also told at the same time then that the family really wasn't trying to look into the situation because obviously at that time it had just happened. It's fresh in their mind. They don't want a lot of media flow coming towards them. They're mourning. They're grieving the whole situation. And that was outlook at that time.
Guy, you're still there, dude?
Yeah. Oh, yes, I am.
Did you want to follow up with anything, or what's up?
Yeah, well, just a little bit. I don't know. I've followed this. First off, I want to thank Joe Biggs for pursuing this story as he has and his sense of loyalty toward Michael. And I feel the same myself to a large extent. I've learned quite a bit more on Pat Tillman and the Crystal Connection over the past 4 years. And, I mean, I just love Michael's book, The Operators, that came out. I mean, it's just the best book I've seen out there that's on Afghanistan. And it's a fun read because he writes with a bit of attitude as well. And
yeah, there's
fact,
a chapter in there. There's actually a chapter in there that he wrote about me.
Yeah, there's a chapter where there's an IED went off and, you know, body parts everywhere. And, yeah, he did mention your name in there. And also in the afterword to his book about his fiancée that was killed in Baghdad back in 2006, he mentioned that incident as well there. So anyhow, I wanted to thank you for that. But what kind of puzzles me with this whole thing right now, it isn't the crash itself. I'm pretty confident that he died, you know, basically, he was, you know, driving fast, or the car was going fast. He ran into a tree, engine injected, all that. I've looked into that stuff, and I don't have any huge, doubts about that, about, you know, how he died. The question for me that's unanswered is, why was the car going so fast at 4 o'clock in the morning? And even with, you know, the report that just came out from the LAPD, I mean, my impression is, and I may be wrong, was they really didn't do an investigation into, you know, was it a possible homicide or foul play? They looked at it. They'd gone back and talked to the brother back at the apartment, figured he was, you know, drugged up or something, took off, and that was it. They didn't do anything else as far as I can tell. There's no evidence gathered according to the report. So to me, that's the fundamental question here is, you know, what was going on that he was, you know, driving that fast? I mean, was a car hacked or you know computer hacked? Is one theory that it looks like, you know, it might be possible, maybe not likely, or well, maybe old-fashioned tampering with the brakes or accelerator, or maybe it was, you know, the, you know, something else going on there. And it just puzzling. The family's kind of remained closed-mouthed about this because last week the report came out and the press is doing a character assassination, saying, hey, you know, he was a relapsed druggie, prime meth head, you know. Stuff that, you know, the meth stuff was just crazy because if you read the report, I mean, you know, his amphetamines, you found a trace of which, well, could have been Adderall. But in any case, I mean, I don't know why the family isn't trying to provide some of the, you know, backstory as to what was going on, whether that was indeed the situation, he was having some issues, or what the case was. And just this morning, I saw there was a piece in therap.com where the family made a statement where the brother declined to discuss the inaccuracies further or address, you know, last week's LA Weekly story that profiled Hastings. So they, you know, still kind of want to remain kind of closed mouth for some reason at this point.
I mean, there's just so many possibilities. That's why when I was first asked, what do you think happened? And I said, I don't want to tell you what I think happened. All I can say is, based off of what I know, is that things don't add up. Now, I could speculate all day long and tell you things that I think happened, and I mean, there's so many possibilities. You've named quite a bit of them, and that's why, since there are so many, we don't have a definitive thing that we can pin something on and go, all right, that didn't happen, that didn't happen. All right, now we've got those two out of the way, so we can focus on these three. It's such a crazy event. There's so many things that happened that we're still trying to filter through the information and try to take away, all right, now we know this is wrong. Okay, what else is there? Okay, that idea, that theory. No, that's possible. We'll push that off to the side. And basically, I mean, that's just the process we're at right now. I got the coroner's report about a day before anyone else heard it or got it at. I'm going to get the FBI report because I have a copy of the FOIA. I'll get that. That's what you're talking about. I just remembered now that I've brought that up. September 9th is the one that I mentioned on Twitter. Will be the FBI's documentation they said they didn't have on Michael Hastings, but which now they have said that they do have on Michael Hastings. The funny thing about that is before I even released the email saying that Mike was worried that the feds were coming after him, the FBI released a statement saying they had nothing to do with it. Now, if no one had said anything about the email, why would the FBI come out and say that they had nothing to do with it? So that was one of the things that first hit me, and I was like, all right, well, that's weird. I'm the only person who put it out there and said anything about it. Why did you guys make this statement beforehand saying that you had nothing to do with it? And now here they are saying they do have information and that we should have it by September 9th. And by we, I mean Jason Leopold. Jason Leopold is a FOIA expert, if you will, out of L.A., and he will be sending me the information of that stuff when he gets it, as well as he will be putting it up across Twitter and everywhere else as he does. But like I said, in this process right now, there's still a lot of unanswered things, and there's a lot of things that collectively we just need to be calm and just kind of work on until we can find out.
Guy, did you have any? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just one other question. I don't know if you've had a chance to read that LA Weekly profile by Gene Mattus, or however you say that name. And I mean, it's actually a pretty well written, and it's certainly complimentary about Michael Hastings' journalistic career. But after I went back and reread through it, it just seemed more, you know, a bit thinly sourced and a bit, you know, speculative about what was actually going on there. In fact, just yesterday I wrote a piece. Because he had briefly mentioned meeting Jeremy Scahill, who wrote a good book called Dirty Wars about all the JSOC operations.
Yeah, he was with Sink Yurik from the Young Turks that same day. The three of them actually hung out and were playing cards, if I'm not mistaken, that night.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were joking about saying that a drone was going to come in and hit them.
Well, actually, that was I think, at Oliver Stone's they were all together. But, well, that was actually my point was he mentions in his article that, hey, you know, he had hung out with Jeremy Scahill, and then he mentions, you know, in May he hung out with Oliver Stone and Glenn Greenwald and some other, you know, folks. But the curious thing, he just passed over it. And then I noticed, you know, I did a little digging there, and he actually had met with Jeremy Scahill on the night of June 12th, just, you know, what, five nights before the crash. And, you know, I can, you know, you can go to my blog and see what I'm talking about. But, he just quoted on how he's effusive, he's excited, he's thinking of buying land, you know, in Vermont. He's, you know, looking forward to working in the NSA stories and stuff. But that profile writer doesn't put any of those quotes in his piece. And the way he kind of wrote it was you'd think, you know, he met with Jeremy Scahill long before, you know, the crash. And
yeah.
my suspicion is, hey, it kind of contradicts his narrative of this guy that's kind of going down in a spiral of PTSD or PTSD and, you know, whatever. And it was quite puzzling because, yeah, you know, they'd spent the, you know, night together and he was in good spirits. You know, he had been at Jeremy Scahill's premiere and a question and answer session right afterwards in LA. And it's I was just wondering, what would your perspective be? Do you think, you know, he was suffering from PTSD some, or what do you think?
I mean, it's definitely a possibility. You know, and like I said, in a lot of the conversations that Mike and I had, you know, he had a lot of concern about things. You know, he was definitely a little on edge, a little worried about stuff. And those are definitely signs of PTSD. A lot of my brothers in arms that, you know, I still talk to that are out now, as long as myself, they have senses of, you know, paranoia from time to time. They get worried about things. And that's completely normal. I mean, after that Macrosa story, he had every reason to feel that way. But the thing is, though, was Mike was definitely working on something. And Mike wasn't just working on something, you know, a couple months ago. Mike had been working on something for quite some time. And I think it all started, you know, maybe 6 months ago. Because if you go back and start watching, go back and watch, get on YouTube and look up Michael Hastings, you know, interviews. You go back a year and you watch him, and he's very calm, collective, you know, maybe, you know, sparks a little controversy here and there in a sense on his interviews. But the last 3 or 4 months before his death, you can kind of see that fire in his eyes. Like he found something out. He was pissed off. He started going on the Young Turks a lot more, and you could see that he had something that he knew, and he was just itching to get it out, and he was pissed off, and it was eating away at him in a sense. And, you know, the night that, you know, I found out that he had died, that's what I did. I got on the internet, I just started watching videos. I just wanted to remember him. I just wanted to – but that's one of the things I remember picking up on, is this huge change that he had, and it all coincides with the fact, all right, well, he was working on a story. Because when I tried to contact him a few months ago, I got one of those automatic responses saying, hey, I'm working on something. I'll get a hold of you after. And what I'm thinking is he had something that he was working on. And that started, you know, really just stressing him out and, you know, really getting him on edge. And he knew something, and he was biting at the trump to get it out there. And like Elisa, when she came out on Piers Morgan, Michael worked on numerous stories. And like Sherry said earlier, he was also working on a story about Barrett Brown. And he was. And I've spoken to the same people that she has. I've also, you know, spoken to them about many different things. And she came across the thing that she mentioned earlier, Endgame. I have an entire folder laying on my bed right now about Endgame, which is in Atlanta, and the program they made, Bonesaw. And that stuff is very chilling. And I challenge people to go out and look it up. Get on the internet, look up Endgame, and look up one of the programs that they made called Bonesaw. These are very crazy things. These are things that Michael and Barrett were both looking into. And it's something that I really do think got him, you know, somebody approached him, somebody did something. And like, you know, like the caller said earlier, he was laying in bed based off what his brother said when he left around 12 o'clock. So there's a gap between about 12:20 at night and about 4:40 in the morning when he died, where something happened. He got spooked and took off and left. He left, and that's really right now what my main focus is trying to figure out what happened in those hours. Already knowing he was scared prior to that, because all of his close friends that I spoke to and people that I know just as well said that Michael started speaking in code. Now, in the email, it says he refers to BuzzFeed, GQ, HQ, all these different terms. These abbreviations are military terms used back in the day, which mean basically prepare your battle stations, get ready for the worst, rally up, and go to a secret kind of comms to communicate that are predetermined.
Hey,
so
I have a question.
Yeah.
Go ahead, continue. Go ahead, finish your point.
Yes, go ahead and ask it.
Oh, no, this was just somebody threw me this question from the chat room. They want to know, do you know where Hastings' laptop is? Has that been apprehended by authorities? The family have that? What's going on with that?
I know exactly where it is. I've known where it was since the memorial. And Elise and I have spoken about it. It is in the, well, at the time of the memorial, it was in the hands of a lawyer. And no, it was not the WikiLeaks lawyer. I still don't know if that's true or not. That's another factor-fishing thing. I'm trying to figure out if that's true or not. I do know Mike spoke to a lawyer before the accident, and I know that Mike, because Elise told me at the memorial, one of the things when she pulled me aside after she thanked me for releasing the email and cried and told me, which this is one thing I didn't know either. Elise knew more about me than I knew about her. I mean, she was telling me stories, saying that Mike used to talk about me all the time. And I just was like, well, that's crazy. I didn't know that. I didn't know that Mike spoke about me to you in his personal life. As far as I was concerned, it was just, you know, Mike and I had our friendship, and that was it. And we just kept that between us and, you know, whatever. You know, I had my life, he had his life, and, you know, he did whatever. But she told me that her brother is a lawyer. Mike had spoken to her brother and told him everything. She asked Michael what he was working on, And basically the way she made it sound to me is that he didn't want her to know anything because the way it sounded was like he didn't want her to know because he didn't want her to know too much to where she could get hurt or anything. The way that's just the way it seemed, the way she kind of said it to me. And that from what I understand, so Elisa's brother, the lawyer, has the laptop and has that in his chain of custody, if you will say.
Right on. Thanks for that question. The chat room, that was Ricera. If anybody else wants to submit questions for Biggs, you can send it to me in a personal message in the chat room. All you do is click on my name, and you can send me a personal private message, and I can read it to Joe on air. Also, you can do it via Twitter. If you want to tweet me questions, you can do that too. We got less than a half hour to go. We're almost done with this nonsense. Thank you, Joe, for sticking it out with us so far. I appreciate this.
Yeah, no problem.
Go
ahead.
One more thing.
Yeah, go
actually,
ahead,
I got to get off to bed. Yeah, I'm in Eastern time, so I can kind of bush. And I don't know if Joe's looked at any of my stuff. Like I said, I blog under Guy Montag at the Feral Firefighter blog. And at your website, I left a few comments if anyone wants to see some links to that. And I'm just curious, Joe, have you looked at any of that stuff yet by any chance?
No, not yet. I mean, I will, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll find it's very find some good stuff there. Probably most of which you already know, but you never know in this case. I mean, right now.
Well, you can just find my Twitter on his Twitter page and just hit me up, and then I'll find you on there.
Yeah, either way, or like I said, if you go to Vince's website, it's on there at Facebook too. Like I said, Feral Firefighter, F-E-R-A-L, then Firefighter. You can find it there.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got quite a bit of stuff in there, but it's still working on it. We're kind of a work in progress right now.
All right. Well, thank you for your questions, sir. I appreciate them.
Yeah, thanks again for your efforts. I appreciate that as well.
Hey, Guy, do you want to get out your Twitter or something?
Not at Twitter. I just give you the website where I have these things posted as a script.
Oh yeah, repeat that.
www.feralfirefighter.com. Feral Firefighter, one word. Like I said, Feral is F-E-R-A-L .blogspot.com. And like
okay.
I said, I've got stuff on the Hastings, also on at least Jordan was quite pissed at the obituary that the New York Times did. So that's actually where my latest thing started, which is up to 150 pages at this point. But then I've got quite a bit of stuff on both his book, The Operators, and then General McChrystal's role in the cover-up of Pat Tillman's friendly fire death. It's been more of my major focus of stuff over the past few years. So, but if people are interested, that's where you can go to find some of that info.
Awesome. Appreciate
all
the
right.
call tonight, Gay. Get Gay.
Okay,
guy.
Thanks.
All right.
Yep.
Peace out. 347-826-7667 is the number. We've got Joe Biggs with us for the next about 20 minutes left. If you have a question for him, this is your chance to do it. You can either send it to me in the chat room or via Twitter, or you can just call in 347-826-7667. I think we're going to take a quick break here, come back, finish things up with Joe Biggs. Once again, our topic tonight has been Michael, the life and death of Michael Hastings. And for those of you who kind of want to catch up on things, here's an early KTLA news clip from the initial reports of his death. Gives you a little bit of filler and a little bit of taste of pretty much the only TV news that did any coverage of it, really. Was essentially just local news. I mean, thank God for local news. Thank God they're not out of business yet. They still have some purpose, it feels like. Even if they're like a slapstick ragtag crew, at least they're out there doing something that the mainstream isn't doing. So here we go. We'll come right back with Biggs, and here's the clip from KTLA about Michael Hastings' untimely death. We'll be right back.
Award-winning journalist Michael Hastings, the FBI said today that Hastings was never under investigation, despite the journalist's apparent concerns that he was the target of a federal probe. The 33-year-old was killed in a fiery one-vehicle car crash early Tuesday morning in Hancock Park. Hastings is best known for a 2010 magazine article that led to the resignation of General Stanley McChrystal, who was the former U.S. and NATO forces commander in Afghanistan. Our Carolyn Costello received an exclusive email Hastings sent just hours before his tragic death.
I thought he was a great person. I mean, he spoke the truth. I mean, he said what needed to be said. He said what a lot of people were scared to say. You know, and it does offend a lot of people, but the truth hurts.
Staff Sergeant Joseph Biggs knew Michael Hastings well. Hastings was embedded with Biggs' unit in Afghanistan back in 2008. He tells us the two have kept in touch over the years. It had been several months since they last spoke when Biggs got an email from Hastings that didn't seem quite right.
Monday morning, I woke up and I get an email and it's very panicked.
Biggs says he was blind copied on the email sent to Hastings' colleagues. It reads, "Hey, the feds are interviewing my, quote, close friends and associates. Perhaps if the authorities arrive at BuzzFeed GQ or HQ, may be wise to immediately request legal counsel before any conversations or interviews about our news gathering practices or related journalism issues. Also, I'm on to a big story and need to go off the radar for a bit."
It alarmed me very much. I wrote a few things. I told a few people about it. I just said it doesn't seem like him. In a sense, I just had this gut feeling and it just really bothered me.
The email was sent just before 1 Monday afternoon. 15 hours later, Hastings was killed in this fiery crash on Highland Avenue. Strangers showed up to the scene to pay their respects.
I'm hoping nobody was following him and he just lost control.
Breaking news photographer Scott Lane happened to be less than a mile from the scene of the crash Tuesday morning and shot this video. Video from his car's dash camera caught what appears to be Hastings' Mercedes minutes before the crash, speeding through a red light. 34 seconds pass, and no other cars pass through the intersection.
There's no cars that are following him, and he flies by, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds goes by, no cars are following him. And
while conspiracy theories circulate on the internet about what might have led to this fiery crash, Staff Sergeant Biggs tells us he just hopes to learn the truth about the events leading up to his friend's death.
I'm going to be willing to help and do whatever I can, though. I want to make sure that people will look into this story and make sure that they find out whatever happened.
And the LAPD said today there appears to be no foul play in the crash that led to Michael Hastings' death. Carolyn Costello, KTLA 5 News.
Disorderly Conduct with your host, Vince in the Bay.
Don't quit your day job.
Mentre la multinazionale Thompson si è impadronita di tutti I brevetti della DPL, la ricerca ufficiale sembra si sia concentrata su applicazioni industriali di scarso interesse sociale e comunicativo, il sogno dei pionieri delle realtà virtuali perché queste siano condivise da più persone ed economicamente accessibili a tutti sembra allontanarsi. Ma la sperimentazione indipendente non si è fermata e oggi, grazie ad alcuni geniali creativi, è possibile accedere a dei sistemi di realtà virtuale a basso costo e condivisibili. Parliamo di Rentro 86, insegnare un bel posto.
These top fighters are really something else.
Flawless victory. Friendship.
Call in now, biatches. 347-826-7667. And now your host, Vince in the Bay.
What a silly Negro.
Oh, geez. And unmuted. Oh, wow. Oh, I just got a tweet from AP Blake. I got to do this live on the air. While I'm doing this, I have to bring back my guest, Joe Biggs. Welcome back, Joe.
How's it going, sir?
It's going fantastical. Dude, you don't have to call me sir, bro. You can call me bro.
Yeah, I know. It's it's beaten into me so many years of to call
it's
someone else there,
I
ma'am. It's
so,
just
to me, it sounds like, you know, a term of respect, and I'm almost flattered.
Well, I mean, that's the way it should be looked at, but I understand a lot of people don't like that. So now that I know, I won't say that again, bro.
All right. Cool, bro. I'm from California, bro. We don't stay shit like that, dude. There's just a ton of shit that I've made notes of that I want to throw out at you. And let's see. Let's go with this one. The McChrystal piece. Did you think it was fair to McChrystal? And did you have any interaction with McChrystal? Were you ever under his command or knew anybody under his command or anything?
Nope, I was never under his command, never met him, didn't know him other than the articles I read and just the overall things that you would hear from, you know, your regular CNN, Fox News type stuff. And for us, we had, you know, what was it, the Armed Forces Network, AFN. So, you know, we got a lot of filtered craziness, but I mean, from what the way Mike was, and this is something that, you know, McChrystal should have had a media team set up, basically something like that. He has, because this is the thing though, when McChrystal got fired, or, you know, had to resign per se, whatever you want to call it, all those people lost their rankings that they made through their time, and now they have to start over again. So he had to have had a team set up who, you know, found out who was going to be coming through. Like, you know, there had to have been a team that was like, all right, Hastings, all right, we know about this guy. You know, he's a very honest guy. He's just going to say stuff, and he's going to, you know, say it how it is. Maybe you might not want to be so blunt and forward and this and that. So do I feel that Michael did anything wrong in that? No, not at all, because McChrystal should have been brought up on the reporter coming to see him and knowing that that's how he was, because we all were. And I'm just a low, regular, nobody army unit that I was in. You know, we were brought up to speed on every reporter who would be coming in, the kind of questions that they typically ask people. And that's just how the military was. They would tell you, all right, these are the kind of questions they do. These are the angles they use. They're either pro-military, they're not pro-military, they're looking to screw you over, they're looking to turn you into some hero that you're not. So he had to have had, at that level, had to have had a team set up that knew what they were getting themselves into. So the way I see it is he just had a blatant disregard, didn't care, and was just speaking his mind. I mean, he was just like, F it, I feel this way, and I don't care what anybody thinks. So, honestly, you know, it's his own damn fault what happened to him. McChrystal should have known better. Number one, when you're in the military, you do not speak about a superior in a negative way to your subordinates or around them. So the way, you know, the stories were broken down is, you know, McChrystal sitting there talking bad about, you know, the president around his, you know, his subordinates. That's a no-no. And him being a general, he should know that. Even, you know, I could find any PFC, any private who just joined the military, and they know you don't talk bad about your superiors in front of lower-ranking men, because that weakens the chain of command and sets off what the military is built off of to establish that chain of command that keeps the machine running in a perfect order, that oiled machine. So the fact that he did that, I mean, honestly, he must have just been at a point in his career where he just didn't care anymore. He knew what he was saying. He knew the repercussions. And Michael was just there doing his job. I mean, to me, I mean, shame on McChrystal for not
knowing better. I mean, really, at that point, you've been in that many years, you're a general, and you know that you don't do that in front of, you know, people. You don't bash your superiors because it makes you look like a weak leader. It made him look bad to do that in front of his men. And on top of that, a guest who's there to represent him to the world.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't. That's just bad news.
Yeah, he should have known better. He should have washed his head.
I mean, he's a grown ass man.
I think at the same time, though, in his defense, though, I think a lot of this stuff was just them hanging out in downtime, drinking and getting fucked up. And I think some of that stuff should just, you know, I believe there should be chivalry in reporting. If he was saying things that are very malicious and stuff, sure, you know, that were complete insubordination, which some of the stuff, you know, granted, is. But I think when he's inebriated, he's hanging out, he's frustrated with downtime, he's frustrated with these generals are always complaining that they don't have enough resources, and, you know, he's probably just cranky and let loose and, you know, thought this kid was not gonna, you know, write down everything and hang on every word, and he let his guard down. And like you said, it's partially his own fault. He should have known better. But
at the end of the day, no one forced a gun to McChrystal's head and said, "Hey,
right,
you are going to join the military. You are going to take up this responsibility. You are going to need to be able to be this way." He knew what he got himself into. You know, if Michael talks to a Joe Schmo, regular GI Joe guy like me at the bottom rank, what I say when I'm drunk is not going to amount to anything, really. It's just friendship, more talking, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I really don't have any kind of secret information to give him that anybody could do a story on. Nothing that would ever harm me in any kind of way. You know, this is a general who is over the war in Afghanistan who should know better to go into a situation and inebriate himself. No one made him drink beer. No one made him do anything like that. He took it upon himself to get to that situation and then say, well, you know, whatever. I just feel comfortable. I'm just going to run my mouth and do this and that. In this day and age, everyone's listening to what you say. This is such a politically correct country now. Everyone hangs on every single word you say, and people are always going to try and hold you accountable for that stuff. And at that, like I said, at that rank, he should have known better. I can't blame. It wouldn't matter who was, you know, writing the story, who was there. They were just doing their job. He should have been doing his job. He didn't do his job. His job should have been maintaining a professional attitude while that reporter was around and acting a certain way, upholding his boss, upholding, you know, what he is supposed to be standing for and what he represents. And he let that go by getting effed up, by going out and getting drink, you know, by going out and drinking and doing all that stuff. He made those choices as a leader, and in essence, it backfired in his face. So there's no one else to blame but McChrystal himself.
Fair enough. Here's a question from Twitter. It says, this is from Fool, almost appropriately named. Anyway, he asks, does Joe suspect McChrystal was involved considering earlier death threats? There's another conspiratorial angle, I believe. But
it's definitely something that I've thought about. I mean, it's something that I even spoke to his wife about. It's something I spoke to Matt Farwell about and Lucian. These were definitely things that we brought up at the beginning because, I mean, it's been proven, it's been, you know, recorded that he had received threats from, you know, the McChrystal administration, if you will, because like I said, those people rise up in power as he does, and if he falls, they fall as well. So that's basically an administration in a sense. He received threats. So, I mean, it is a valid point. It is a valid angle to pursue, and it's something that I have pursued and I will continue to pursue until I find something. I don't think it's something I could just say, no, that just sounds crazy. I think it is a very valid argument because Michael, you know, voiced to me that he was scared about that. And it's definitely something that needs to be looked into. So, yeah.
Cool. I think we have less than we got 8 minutes to go. I want to squeeze in some questions. I believe I have somewhere on hold Andrew Blake. I'm going to take a wild, wacky guess and say this is him.
Vincey, Bunch the
Boys, Ball. Okay, Doug, I think that's definitely Andrew Blake. What's up, Blake?
Hey, what's up, Vince? What's happening?
Hello, how are you? You're on with Joe Biggs. We've been talking about Hastings all night. We had a blogger on earlier, but who goes by the name of Sherry Speak, and she's been reporting on the Hastings story, and she's been in close contact with Biggs, who's on a journey.
He crashed the fuck out of that thing, huh?
What?
I said he crashed the fuck out of that thing. Huh?
Perhaps. Yes.
Yeah, I mean that.
Did you have a question that you wanted to ask Joe?
Myself?
Yes.
No, I was just told that there was fun internet radio time tonight. I got really excited that there's going to be fun internet radio time. I'm kind of interested in the whole case. I've been following it for gosh, I guess it's been, I think it was it June 20th, June 19th? I think, I've been following it, and I think it's kind of really terrifying at this point. It's kind of just sad that, you know, there was, it looked like the family was making a conscious effort not to disclose that there was serious concerns among them, and that they only resurfaced when the coroner's report came out that he was relapsing. And I just think it was sad that people tried to jump to conspiracies. And then after the fact, it came out that this guy was very troubled at the time. And I think it's just sad. But YOLO. YOLO.
Total. Yeah, YOLO. You know, YOLO is... I think YOLO should be outlawed on my show. If it's not, it should be. It's terrible, dude. That's what was this? 2010? What are you? Who are you?
Me? I don't even know who I am. But no. I mean,
you're not going to say swag or based next, are you? Is this thing on? Hello.
Is the bass? The bass, and I keep thinking you're trying to think the pictures to me, and it's getting me really uncomfortable.
I love to make you.
Oh, there you go. Okay, you're perfect now. Go on.
What? When am I not perfect? What are you talking about?
Oh, Vince. But no. I mean, I had. Wait. Is someone going to give me like? Do we have a counter argument right now, or are you wrapping up the show? Do I have to like? Do I have to rant on further? Do I have to like bring up a?
I think you're going to go on timeout. I think you're going to take 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Panda Blake. Andrew Blake, 2 minutes.
Next caller.
Anybody else want some? If you want to chime in, press the number 1. We've got 4 minutes to go. So if you want to call on, you got to do it now. You call the number 347-826-7667 and press the number 1, and that'll alert me that you want to be put on the air. We'll bring back Panda in just a second. He's on timeout for saying YOLO and being a little bitch, kind of. He was kind of being a little bitch. Oh, man, I tell you, man, these New York hipsters, you got to look out for them. Oh, I have a quick question. One of the other things I wanted to ask, what's Alex Jones like? What is he honestly like as a person and his whole behind the scenes operation? What was your impression of that? You know, it's obvious you've got to hang out with him quite a bit.
You know, people have this whole mindset about him as being this just crazy off the wall guy. And honestly, the first time because like I said, when this whole incident happened, I have to give you a backstory. When this whole thing happened, I released the email. Everyone wanted to talk. I mean, I had people from Geraldo Rivera, which I couldn't do because Elise hates him and has verbally spoken that via Twitter. So I turned him down, and she asked me not to speak to him. And
most of the times when I talk to anyone, I bounce it off her and other friends of Michael's. Well, I get a call one time from this guy, and he's like, hey, I work for a show called InfoWars. He's like, do you know what that is? I was like, I have no freaking clue what that means. I was like, you know, I honestly have no clue. And they're like, all right, cool. He's like, there's a guy named Alex Jones. And I go, oh, okay, Alex Jones. Like, I've heard that name before. I was like, isn't he the guy that got into that gun argument on the Piers Morgan show? And he was just really, you know, passionate and crazy and, you know, just went, you know, all over on him and just kind of, you know, blew Piers out of the water, so to say, in that, you know, in that argument. Piers just had nothing to say. So then I was like, oh, man, shit. I just agreed to talk to this guy, and I don't know much about him other than this could just go completely the wrong way that I expected it to. So I talked to him, and, you know, I spoke to his producers, and they were all really nice people and very caring and really concerned about the whole story itself, and so was Alex. And, you know, I did have a chance to meet him, and in person, he really is a very nice man. I mean, he's a very good father, I'll tell you that. I've met his son. His son is one of those well-mannered children I've ever met in my life, and that's going way out there because I've met a lot of my buddy's kids before. I mean, he raised a very smart child. This kid knows more than anything out of anybody I've ever known. And he, you know, Alex was just, he really is a very nice guy, and he does have different opinions on things, and some of them are out there, and a lot of people aren't going to agree with a lot of things that he says, and, you know, that's the beauty of America. We have the ability to say whatever we want to say and talk about things, and he has his platform to speak on and talk about, and that's his business, to say whatever it is he wants to say, and if he thinks something, I mean, by God, that's his given right to say it. You know, like I said, outside, off the camera, that person you see on there, he really is a well-mannered, heartfelt man who just really cares and wants to make sure that, you know, the way I perceive him is he really cares about the things that he believes in and speaks about, and his whole crew there just really seemed very dedicated and very just passionate about life and their work, and, you know, none other than I've ever seen from any other group of people before. It was different than what I had built up in my head.
Yeah, right on. No, he seems like a very passionate individual. It seems like he wears his heart on his sleeve. I know a lot of people, like for instance, Joe Rogan thinks he's completely nutter, but he loves him to death. He loves to hang out with him.
Oh, yeah, they do. Alex talked about Joe quite a bit, yeah.
And Joe's a character. I don't know if you've seen, there's a great YouTube video of Doug Stanhope doing stand-up in Austin, and Doug invited Alex to the show, and Alex, like, introduced him, and before the show could even get started, he's, like, getting into it with hecklers in the audience, and he finally goes and sits down, and Doug starts his shtick, and these people keep hassling Alex Jones, and he keeps yelling back. It's just, he's such a rabid character. It's hilarious. He is honestly an amazing entertainer, and I have to give him credit. No matter what you want to think about him, he has created his own little media empire, and I think it's great. I think it's, you know, he's found a way to brand himself. He's, you know,
the funny thing about that, though, is everybody thinks this is something that, you know, that's kind of new for him. Well, when I was down in Austin, and, you know, I had a chance to meet one of his really good friends that, you know, he went to middle school and high school with, you know, this guy was telling me that Alex in school used to, you know, avoid hanging out with people. And he used to run up to his buddies and, you know, at lunch and be like, hey, did you hear that the government was doing this and that? And, like, he was just so enthralled with the government and what was going on and, you know, trying to figure out information about things and, you know, sports and, you know, fashion, you know, fads and all that stuff. It really didn't matter to him. He was just passionate about real news, finding things out, and he wanted to be the one that told people about it. And I thought that was kind of like a cool fact from someone who really knew him his whole life. And, you know, I even met that guy's father, and that was, you know, Alex was basically like a son to him. And they, I mean, they all just said he was just a very passionate person as a child all the way up until how he is now about whatever it is he believes in. That's how it is, and he's going to support it, and he's going to back it up. And, I mean, all the power to him. I mean, if you're passionate about something, I say go with it.
No doubt. Yeah, I think you're honoring that spirit by doing the exact same thing. I think that's awesome. And I really appreciate you coming out tonight and giving so much of your time, especially I know it's late. You got a busy life and a busy schedule. I really appreciate it tonight, Joe. We're going to wrap it up here. Do you have any parting thoughts, anything you want to promote, anything you want to get off your chest before we sign off?
Like I've told everybody from the get-go, if you have any inputs or anything that could help me along the way, follow me on Twitter at Rambo Biggs, RamboBiggs. Outside of that, I just appreciate the chance to come out and speak. I hope people, gained a little something out of this and feel a little bit more informed about the situation. I mean, there's a lot going out there that I still don't know about, and I'm going to continue to do my best to figure out what's going on. I respect everyone's positive feedback and their negative feedback. I don't get mad at anybody for any of that stuff, and all it does is fuel me to continue to do what I can to, just help a buddy out. So I just thank you for the opportunity and for having Sherry on as well and letting me speak with her as well. That was great. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. That was awesome. I really appreciated both of your participation and contributions tonight. And hopefully we can have you on again in the future for an update. I know there's going to be a report coming out on the 9th. It'd be interesting to see what comes out in that.
And I remember you saying something about Syria. I actually have an entire bedroom full of documents right now on the floor that I've been scattering through for the past 3 or 4 days because I'm supposed to be doing a story coming up on the local Fox show here for just as a military aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just got a lot of paperwork on that. So, I mean, we could talk about that one day. So it's up to you.
Absolutely. I'd love to have you back to talk about Syria. I was hoping we could touch on it a little bit tonight, but obviously, the topic was Hastings. And I was glad we thoroughly explored that topic because I've been meaning to do it for a while. And I think it's a story that has to be followed, just if anything, just for the sake of honoring the spirit of this young guy who had his career cut way too short.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Joe.
Bro.
All right, bro. All right, dude. We'll catch you later, man. Until next time, follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/VinceInTheBay. And I'm going to sign off now. This goes out to Biggs, do you like Primus?
Do I like who?
Primus? You ever heard of Primus?
Yes, sir. Yes, I have. I just the phone cut out.
Oh, no worries. This is one of my favorite songs. I think it's still relevant today. I think Les Claypool wrote this in reference maybe to the first Gulf War. I'm not sure, but this is an old school Primus song called Too Many Puppies. It's about sending kids off to needless wars. And I'm out. Peace out. We'll be right back.
you very nice.